too quiet yet. Playboy of the month. Hell, I ain't no playboy.
Few of his exploits brought Lincoln Rockwell's ideas before a larger number of receptive minds than the interview he consented to give Playboy magazine. The actual questioning was done by an easygoing, old-style Negro named Alex Haley, and it went on through several sessions over a long period of time before finally appearing in the magazine. When he read the final product, after it had been, quote, shaped and created, unquote, by Playboy's Jewish editor Murray Fisher, Commander Rockwell hardly recognized it. But when he considered the potential in reaching young white Americans, he decided to authorize publication. The tape recordings of the interview sessions make a mockery of Murray Fisher's version, and incidentally, those who have read it might compare Alex Haley's actual questioning style with the incisive, argumentative questions that finally got into print.
Now, let's see.
I think that's one of the big problems in society right now. When you say the next thing, I think that people always ask me, don't you think there's a lot of rotten Gentiles, a lot of white people? And I certainly agree, there are. And my answer is, after we get the country cleaned up with the big problems, then I think the next thing is to do something about some of the rotten white Gentiles that we have. There's plenty of those. Socialism is the only doctrine which will actually give our people a spiritual lift. We'll give them something to live for and believe in. I think most people are atheists now, or close to it. And national socialism, like communism, is a faith. And I believe that it will give our people the fill the spiritual vacuum so that the parasitic nature of so many white Gentiles will dissipate, get rid of it.
Do you feel that I probably already know it's on individual basis, it's just who is right, but do you feel that there is a pattern within the area of encompassed by Gentiles only that where this rightness is more incidental?
Oh, yes, yes.
Racial urban.
In cities. I think that we are going to have to find a way to bring the people in cities, particularly the super sophisticated, to an appreciation of nature. And what used to be called corn, I think that humor, the humor of Lenny Bruce is some of the, although he happens to be Jewish, there's some Gentiles who appreciate this. And I think this is a sign of rottenness inside, decaying, degeneracy. And that in order to stop it, we've got to give our people a feeling for the land, for nature, for closeness to our animal origins. In other words, I think what we've got to do is, I think we are the only organization which is not just negative. All the rest of them are again this and again that and again that. We are for a doctrine. And national socialism, the doctrine of national socialism, is very close to a religion, the worship of nature, as God created it. I believe that if you take a rip a human being out of his natural environment and put him in concrete, well, if you've been a Navy man, you know it's like aboard a ship. The machines all going and the steel all the time, and it destroys something. I was brought up on the coast of Maine, and I thought when I got in the Navy, I was going to be in wooden ships and hear creaking and something natural by a wooden ship. And you get in that, it's just like being in jail. I don't know if you've ever been in jail, but a jail is just a lot like a Navy ship, all tin and steel and bulkheads and... It destroys what the Indian had, for instance. The ability to commune with the Great Spirit is gone out of our people, out in our cities.
This was one of Commander Rockwell's basic ideas. Let's rejoin Penny Nyland now as we try to learn more of the worldview that underlay the activities of this extraordinary personality.
I wonder if you could... I've read a good deal of your literature, and there's various writings of yours about your particular view of mankind and what you think man is. I wonder if you could elaborate on this.
Well, I think that the best way to understand my view of mankind is to read a book called African Genesis by Robert Ardrey. It's a wonderful book which shows that we are evolved from our simian ancestors, and that the reason that we became men was basically because one little ape, a very small ape, was driven out of the forest by the bigger apes and the trees and onto the belt, onto the plain of Africa, and he picked up a weapon for the first time and became aggressive and a meat eater. And because he became aggressive and a meat eater, he began to develop a brain, and his small ganglia developed into a large thinking brain, and this is the basic reason that mankind became mankind and human. And now we have reversed that process. Humanity has become so humanitarian and soft, like the Romans, that they're beginning to recede back to the jungle and back to the trees. So that I feel that the basic thing that's necessary for mankind to prosper and survive and continue to evolve rather than devolve is to return to a respect for his animal origins. And this is what we feel is the basic fault of humanitarianism and liberalism. They've got too big for their britches, and they've forgotten that they're animals, and that we live every day of our lives as animals. Just because we have clothes on doesn't make it any different. We still defecate and urinate and reproduce like animals. Everything that we do is precisely like animals. Most of all, we evolve like animals. We either have respect for our breeding, or we're going to breed down. And that's what I think we're doing now.
Well, do you think we think like animals?
I think we do. I think that thinking is not a very special to a human being. I think human beings simply are able to think better than other animals. It's already been proved. For instance, the chimpanzees can think to a degree. It's just that our thinking is on a higher degree. And I believe that if you spend enough millions of years, you could breed chimpanzees who certainly be the equal of Martin Luther King. And a few more millions of years, and you might breed them up to white men. And I think we are now breeding white men back to Martin Luther King's level, and pretty soon we'll be down to the chimpanzee level if we don't pay some attention to our breeding. Hell, everybody recognizes no farmer in the world with a beautiful, well-bred cow would breed it to a scrub bull. And yet, human beings now are preaching precisely that for themselves. And this, to me, is just pure insanity.
Of all the unlikely people to be thrown together in this world, perhaps Lincoln Rockwell and that archetype Jewish smutmonger Ralph Ginsburg would be the most improbable. Yet Ginsburg did show up one day at party headquarters in Arlington to do an interview, which he later published in Fact magazine. Surprisingly enough, he asked some of the most perceptive questions of any interviewer of whom we have a record. At the same time, the impression he gives is not the slime-dripping reptile of his public image, but rather of a low-key and even a bit naive New York Jew.
Well, now, two-thirds of the world's population live by the tenets of Jesus Christ, Karl Marx.
The hell they do.
And Sigmund Freud.
That is a lot of baloney. Two-thirds of the world's population go around mouthing the tenets of Jesus Christ. But I have never met anybody that I would call a Christian. I haven't met him yet. I couldn't understand that when I was a little kid, when I was a Christian. I could never understand why these people would tell me how to believe in all this stuff, and then they wouldn't do it themselves.
In short, you believe, as the communists do, that agnosticism is the correct...
Communists are atheists.
Is there a difference between atheists and an agnostic?
Most certainly, yes, sir. I think an atheist and a religious person are both conceited. Both of them say, I have examined the universe. And the Christian says, I've examined the entire universe, and I find that the only true religion is this. And the atheist says, I have examined the universe, and there ain't no God. And I don't think you can make either one of those statements. I think both of them are conceited. My statement is, I don't know. I don't know how I got here, and I don't know where I'm going or if I'm going anyplace. And I refuse to have anything to do. We have atheists, Catholics, Protestants. Religion has no part of this battle. I let anybody in here regardless of religion, but not regardless of race.
What do you believe is the purpose of life?
The purpose of life is to struggle as hard as you can for what you believe in and enjoy the struggle.
In other words, you see life as primarily a struggle.
Life is struggle. Even to stand up is a struggle against the law of gravity. And I think that the joy of life is in the struggle itself, not the victory. Because if it were, we all lose. We're all going to croak. We all lose the battle of life. So if you can't find fun in the fight to live,
and to live to the fullest, then you're a failure already before you even start.
And the only pleasures are to be derived from struggle. There are no pure unalloyed joys.
I think all pure unalloyed, even the joy of thinking, is the effort to avoid chaos, is to make your thinking clear and sharp and precise, which is a struggle.
Do you believe that there can be a positive relation between two human beings called love?
Well, certainly. I've experienced it.
And you find it a struggle?
Yes, it's a struggle.
Love is a struggle.
Yes, indeed it is. It's a struggle to control yourself and to systematize your emotions so that you don't hurt the person you love with things that you can't help sometimes doing.
I don't get very much relaxation. When you see how the cell phone rings and what goes on here, no matter what I do, I get interrupted. The only thing that I can enjoy anymore, I can't chase women, I can't drink, I can't have any ordinary, normal pleasures. The only one I have left is music. I love that. I have my stereo here. And that's the only thing I can enjoy.
I had that, another question that brought this in, but it may well come here. I had a question. I had someone to say about what are some of the prices you had to pay for your...
I've lost my family. That's the most terrible price I've had to pay. I live a very lonely life. And I love kids. I just love kids almost more than a man should. I mean, I sometimes wonder whether I'm natural or not. But most people don't like kids, but I love them. And I even love other people's kids, and I never can be around kids. And I never see my own. I've got seven kids, and I never see any of them.
That's right. Where are they here?
Four in Iceland and three in the Connecticut.
In Iceland.
That's why my wife is an Icelandic girl.
Oh, I see.
Now she's the niece of the ambassador here.
I know that you've been in Canada, I think, two or three times recently. In Toronto, I think you mentioned before our broadcast, you had been through Regina.
Yes.
One time. Didn't you sneak into the province of British Columbia at one time disguised as a priest?
No, as a rabbi.
A rabbi.
I figured that they were kicking Nazis out. They'd welcome rabbis. And sure enough, I came across with a young couple in Detroit in a rabbi's rig, and they couldn't, they were bowing and scraping and practically dragging me in.
As Karl Marx once wrote, the people involved with communism are extremely sensitive to ridicule and mockery, and so it was that the one thing most infuriating to the forces which regarded themselves as his enemies was Lincoln Rockwell's irresistible sense of humor. Perhaps this was because these egotistical people, who believed themselves to be superior, were so used to doing the mocking. It was a bitter pill to suddenly have to have their own foibles and pretensions made sport of.
I understand that that you have written a letter to the B'nai B'rith, which is requesting that that they are demanding that they allow you to...
Oh, yes, I've made a membership in the B'nai B'rith, and I want to run for office. I would like to try to be the president of the B'nai B'rith. Since the president of the NAACP, for instance, is a Jew, I don't see why they shouldn't have a Nazi as the head of the B'nai B'rith.
What has been their reaction so far?
They are trying to duck it. We went to a synagogue. I took 25 men and went out to a synagogue in Silver Springs, the local Tel Aviv area here. And they had all their Jew storm troops out there to refuse us admission. They want everybody else to mix, but they won't let us in their synagogue. So I'm going to go to the U.S. federal courts and demand marshals to escort us into the synagogue so that the Jews will have to mix do the same as everybody else.
Well, if you run into continued opposition both in the synagogues and in B'nai B'rith, do you plan court cases?
I say that, so I just told you.
I mean,
under the civil rights law, everybody's got to mix, and the Jews got to mix too, so we're going to mix.
Well, they got a big lobby over in Congress now, you know.
Yeah, they're trying to outlaw regular sex.
I know that.
Yeah, they claim it's filthy. Their ways.
And the hell of it is, all these so-called religious leaders, hell, they ain't doing nothing about it.
Nothing about it? They're helping them, Floyd.
That's what I'm saying.
They're in charge of the homosexual convention.
That's what I'm saying.
Rabbi Lippman.
That's what I'm saying.
The rabbi.
In charge that the homos have a lobby in Congress?
They do, the Machine Society. And they are trying to legalize homosexual marriage. And they have a propaganda, some of which I have in my files here, which they say that, not heterogeneous, let's see, what is it, heterosexual activity, is filthy and nasty and vile. And they recommend, they recommend not only artificial insemination, but they recommend that...
Hold on for a second, man. Do you claim that the head of the local homo convention was their convention here?
They had, but oh, yes, they had a big convention down here at the biggest hotel.
Sherman?
Yeah, was it the Sherman Hotel?
Sherman Park.
Sherman Park Hotel.
Sherman Park.
It was about 6 months ago, and we tore it all to pieces. I sent in one of my boys into the lobby of the Sheridan Park
Hotel. Who was the head of it?
Not the head of it. Rabbi Lippman was the sponsoring, founding patron, or whatever you want to call it, of this gang of filthy creeps.
Rabbi
Lippman, L-I-T-T-M-A-N.
Where's he from?
San Francisco. So I sent one of my boys in with a huge, great big grocery box, all wrapped up in pink paper and pink ribbons, and has a big sign on it that said, Rush, emergency shipment, 24 quarts of Vaseline, queer convention, Sheraton Park Hotel. And I had to rush into the lobby and holler, where's Rabbi Lippman? And I got his Vaseline for the queer convention. Queer to run up the walls. I sent a cop to arrest us, and the cop got laughing so hard he fell up against the wall, couldn't even ditch him.
And when he came before a large audience, his humor often catalyzed a lighthearted mood that made his audiences lower their hostility and abandon preconceived feelings of opposition. This youthful crowd at Northwestern University had greeted Commander Rockwell with a mixture of mistrust and frosty reserve, but it did not take too long before the commander's wit and his almost uncanny rapport with an audience had them all but rolling in the aisles.
You have three television networks, CBS, NBC, and ABC. CBS is headed by William Paley. His real name is William Palinsky, a Russian Jew. NBC, the chairman of the board is Sarnoff, David Sarnoff, another Russian Jew. And ABC is Leonard Goldenson, another Russian Jew. You have no way of getting anything over your television that doesn't get filtered through these people. Now, don't you think that they might be a little bit prejudiced for their side? How about if three Nazis ran our television stations? There's something screwy when you can't find out the information. You can discuss Negroes, you can discuss Italians, you can even insult Negroes. You can get out there and say the Negroes at Watts were criminals and so forth, but you cannot discuss Jews. I don't care who you are in this audience, how brave you are, most of you won't even dare use the word Jew. You say a nice Jewish boy. Nobody dares to say he's a Jew. You're afraid of them. They've got us scared to death to discuss the question, and I say to you, ladies and gentlemen, there should be no subject in this country that we're afraid to discuss, especially when it impinges on the security of the United States of America and the white Christian people of the whole world. As the 16 convicted communist traitors have proved, if communism is Jewish, you ought to know it. And I ought not to be called a hate monger for telling you that. I think it's wrong, ladies and gentlemen, for anybody to be terrorized out of investigating anything. You have the right to read any book. You have the right to hear any speaker. And that includes the vile communists that I just soon gas. But you ought to hear it before we gas. Okay, go ahead with the questions. By the way, Miss Cadis has informed me that the punishment for contempt here is to be locked up in her dormitory. And if that's the case, I'm gonna gladly try to. Bring him on.
The American Nazi Party.
The American Nazi Party is organized for two fundamental purposes. First, to preserve the white race, because I believe that our civilization, Western Christian civilization, emanates from the white race, not from some other race. And if we don't preserve the white race, where the whole business is going to crack up, and I think it is cracking up. The secondary purpose of the American Nazi Party is to preserve the American Constitutional Republic the way it was created, not the way Earl Warren and those rats on the Supreme Court have twisted it around.
Would you define what white race?
Would I define the white race? Well, if you go down to South Chicago, I believe I can show you the opposite of any.
I don't know if you can define the white race.
I consider the Jews to be, most of them. I've seen some Jews who are kind of shady there, but I... most Jews, I would say, are white.